a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The second announcement, probably the most important one of the day, we have got a longtime staff person, Dave Jacobson, who is going to be retiring at the end of this week. He has been with the commission for 29 years. And as a guy who greatly appreciates experience and longevity, I've grown to appreciate Dave and how he handles his job and the service he's given to the people of the state and to this commission. And so, Dave, I just want to tell you, we are going to miss you. I'm going to miss you, and thank you for everything you've done for the people of South Dakota. Okay, with that, is there a motion dealing with the approval of the corrected minutes from the meeting of May 7th?
Move to approve May 7th corrected minutes.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen. Commissioner Hansen, if you're on mute, we're not hearing you. Commissioner Hansen. Okay, we'll take just a moment. Again, Commissioner Hansen, if you are trying to speak, we're not hearing you. We will be at ease for a moment. Commissioner Hansen, are you on with us?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Did you hear the motion?
No, I didn't. I'm having some challenges here with, I cannot use the internet at all on my computer here, and actually I can't access anything from the state and having some problems with the phone as well, so we'll just have to see how well it goes here. Please repeat the motion.
Certainly. Commissioner Feagin made a motion to approve the corrected minutes from the meeting of May 7th. And there was no discussion. We're ready for the vote.
Okay.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Now to consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you. The commission received a total of 67 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 21st, 2013 commission meeting. 11 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 19 contacts involved electric service, 4 contacts involved natural gas service, 2 contacts involved gas and electric service, 8 contacts involved cell phone service, 5 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, 1 contact was related to the Grain Warehouse Division, and 17 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 737 of the 771 complaints received in 2013 have been resolved.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you. We will move to our telecommunications dockets. The first one, TC-13-035, in the matter of the application of Boomerang Wireless LLC, DBA N-Touch Wireless for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. We've got a motion from SDTA for intervention. I'll turn it over to SDTA.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm Darla Rogers. I'm appearing today on behalf of SDTA. I would preface my remarks by saying I think there's a conspiracy underfoot to put me outside of my comfort zone. First of all, we're meeting at 1 o'clock, and we're in the wrong room, and I walked in and saw all these ag people, and I'm thinking I'm in the wrong place. So it's a comfort to do the telecommunications dockets first, and I appreciate that. SDTA has filed a petition to intervene in docket TC-13035. I am probably living proof that some of the points that are raised in the petition to intervene are indeed true. This morning when I was familiarizing myself with the file, I was reading through the petition of Boomerang Wireless, DBA NTouch Wireless, for designation, and I got to the reference to their the exhibit that lists the areas in which they wish to provide or receive ETC designation, and I looked at the exhibit, and I'm looking at some of these areas, and I was not understanding the rate centers versus local exchange areas, and they just didn't seem to match up. So I looked at the maps, and that didn't really help. So I grabbed the phone to call Rich to say what's going on here, Rich, on behalf of SDTA, and then I read the intervention petition. And, of course, those are some of the points, or that's one of the points that he raised. I think there are a lot of questions concerning the rate centers, and that's not really designation of or a listing of local exchange areas. And then, of course, the other point that he raises is that, you know, all of the SDTA member companies are rural exchanges, and I think that there needs to be maybe a further concern and question concerning the public interest part of it. And so for those reasons, we would ask the commission to grant SDTA's petition to intervene. I would stand by for questions.
Thank you. Any questions at this point? Seeing no questions, we'll go to Boomerang. I know they have made a filing that they do not object to the intervention, but is there anybody on the line representing Boomerang? Okay, nobody there. We'll go to staff.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and Boomerang did notify us that they would not be on the phone for this matter, and they do not object to the intervention. Therefore, staff would recommend that the commission grant the intervention to SDTA. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in TC-13-035, move that the commission grant intervention to SDTA.
Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen. Commissioner Hansen, we're not hearing you if you're speaking.
Aye.
Excellent. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Intervention is granted. TC-13-038, in the matter of the application for transfer of certificates of authority from Transnational Communications International, Inc. to TNCI Operating Company, LLC. We have Peter Helms on the line from Transnational and several from TNCI, so whoever wants to take it from there.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Brett Ferencek. I'm an attorney for TNCI Operating Company, LLC. And I have also on the phone Jeff Compton with President and CEO of TNCI Operating Company, LLC, and, of course, Peter Helms from Transnational. We don't have anything really to add but are available here for questions should you or staff have any.
Thank you. We'll go to staff.
This is Robin Meyrink of staff. We should note that the applicant, which is a newly formed company, has requested a waiver of ARSD 2010-24029 and ARSD 2010-32312, which require submission of the applicant's historical financial statements. Staff recommends granting of the waivers and granting the certificate of authority for both local and inter-exchange service with restrictions for retail purposes from offering prepaid calling cards or accepting customer deposits or advance payments without prior approval of the commission, and that the applicant be subject to rural safeguards.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the commission? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move in TC 13-038 that the commission grant the waivers as requested and the certificate of authority to TNCI operating company with the restrictions outlined by staff, including the rural safeguards. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us back around to the top of the agenda, the grain warehouse docket that we have all gathered for today. Grain Warehouse 13-002 in the matter of the filing by South Dakota Grain and Feed Association for the approval of a waiver of ARSD 20:10:12:13(9). And with that, I will turn it over to South Dakota Grain and Feed to make their case.
There. Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Zander, and I'm the Executive Director of the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association. And I'm here today to request a waiver allowable in ARSD 20-10-12-17. Our letter dated to you May 10, 2013, explains that we request the portion of the rule of ARSD 20-10-12-13, subsection 9, be waived, and a new subsection 10 be added. This waiver would not be detrimental to grain sellers and is in the public interest. The South Dakota Grain and Feed Association submitted this request because of the April 4, 2013 ruling by Circuit Judge Tony L. Portra that stated pursuant to SDCL 49-4511 and ARSD 2010-1213 that a VCS contract or voluntary credit sale is not enforceable unless signed by both parties. Knowing that over $5 million of grain is bought and sold in South Dakota each year, and that most of these sales begin with a verbal contract, the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association initiated HB 1167 during the 2009 legislative session. This legislation granted a change in the Uniform Commercial Code to allow for verbal contracts with respect to the sale of grain sorghums, beans, and oilseeds. House Bill 1167 passed unanimously and resulted in SDCL 57A-2-201. During the legislative process, there is no distinction about what kind of contract was included in the legislation, whether it be voluntary credit sale or delayed price, but all contracts. One of the members of the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association is going to follow me and explain how this ruling impacts their business practices and those of their farmer customers. But in closing, I ask you consider this request because farmers need this change so they can continue to deliver to elevators and retain the ability to price and sell grain at their discretion. The grain industry also needs to have this rule change in place, and we need it by harvest so that our members can continue to buy, sell, and ship grain as it is delivered before the grain exceeds elevator storage capacity, and then they can no longer service their farmer customers. Thank you for considering our request, and I will stand by for questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I'll keep questions till the end. And who would like to appear next? Jerry?
Commissioner, staff, good afternoon. My name is Jerry Cope. I work for Dakota Mill and Grain out of Rapid City, but I'm here today as president of South Dakota Grain and Feed Association. And to follow up on what Kathy said, we requested the waiver because from the grain industry, our primary goal is to just make doing business for South Dakota farmers easier, make the rules functionally universal, and make them easier to understand but flexible within the terms of the law. What we've got now with this new ruling is a playing field that's uneven, and we want to get that back to a more even playing field without some detours and conflicting rules that both we'll have to remember as elevators and farmers will have to remember as they're dealing with grain on what type it is. You know, we had that before the judge's ruling. It effectively treated all grains the same under The statute of frauds, law 57A, with the verbal contracting process. I know we've talked about that before, but if I could, I'd like to explain that again. What the verbal contracting is, it allows a producer to call and check prices on the phone and sell grain on, or say what kind of disposition they want with the grain, just with a phone call, and then there's paperwork that's followed up as soon as practically possible. So we don't eliminate the paperwork follow-up. It's just with the markets ever-changing, and today was a good example. We had in corn, we had new crop corn starting out unchanged last night on the overnight. By the time it got this morning, it was down 12. And, you just don't know. That goes on and on. So if we had to wait till the farmer actually come in the door to sign the contract, they're at risk. We're at risk, and it really doesn't behoove the ag industry in any positively manner. the Judge Portra's ruling on the bond distribution, we're not addressing that. We can live with that. That's not really the issue. Excuse me. The issue is the unintended consequences that ruling brought. It opened up some potential conflicts, and not even potential, opened up conflicts we've already seen on the timing and pricing of grain. Under the new PUC rules that we've been told to operate under, there's a 30-day limit for this unpriced grain. And if you're out listening in the industry or listening to get yourself educated on this, I need to back up. Everybody says grain business is smoke and mirrors, and it's really not, but sometimes we do confuse things unintentionally. You'll hear people talk about DP grain. You'll hear people talk about deferred price. You'll hear them talk about no price established grain. Well, you have to ask some questions, because if you hear an elevator say DP grain, they might mean delayed price, which is simply farmer gives title to their grain to the elevator so they can ship it and will price it later at their discretion. Some elevators will call DP grain deferred price, which means they sell it, the price is known, but they don't want paid until another time period, usually for tax purposes. It's legal. Elevators typically pay a rate of interest on that because they don't have to pay money out, so it's advantageous to the elevator, but it allows the farmer security to know his grain is priced. So if you hear DP, you kind of have to ask, is it delayed price or is it deferred price? And then the other term is no price established, which is NPE, which is really the same as the delayed price. It just means the price is established later. So if you hear those terms, you sometimes have to ask a couple questions to make sure you're on the same playing field as what the people are talking about. Now, typically, we'll send out these delayed price or NPE contracts. In our case, our company, we send them out every 2 weeks to try and get them back within this 30-day limit. Every elevator does it a little different because there is no standard. There's no law or rule that says how you have to do that. It's just that if you have grain that's delayed priced, you have to have a signed contract that's the will or the intent of the farmer before 30 days is up. So we've got that issue that since we've had to go to every 2 weeks, it does create more paperwork for us. It creates more paperwork for the farmers. Today, when grain is hauled in, if we don't know the disposition or if a farmer chooses, we'll put it in that delayed price status. And like I said, we send those contracts out. And if we don't get any back within 30 days, which sometimes happens, right now they're busy. They're busy spraying. They're busy planting. I've had farmers tell me, I don't only look at my mail every 2 weeks. And I'm not saying that's good business practice, but it's fact. It's reality. So if you've got stuff that goes over 30 days under the new PUC rules, we have to write a check for that. So that may cause a farmer to get a check at a time he doesn't want because of tax planning purposes, and maybe at a price he doesn't want, because there's no rule on what day you have to use to set that price. So that opens up a whole nother can of worms, because could the price, say if you're doing it on the 30th day, could the price have been higher 15 days earlier, and a guy comes in and says, I didn't sign anything, I want the price 15 days ago. And that creates a whole nother level of uncertainty. So that's what we're after in this, is to try and get that level. I got a I might get in trouble here a little bit, but the PUC has been a little inconsistent on how these rules are enforced. It's my understanding in my conversations with Mr. Melhoff that every ticket date stands on its own. I've had other members of South Dakota Grain and Feed tell me that some PUC members or auditors have said, no, you can average the dates. And I've had some say, no, we'd take the last date, the last ticket in at the start of our 30 days. So that's another level of uncertainty that we've got in there. And that's probably more on the elevators because they don't want to get in trouble. But if you've got those conflicting messages, you know, which is it? So we need, you know, who's on first type of thing. So if it's load by load and every ticket date stands on its own, that could create a whole another round of paperwork if a guy's delayed because of rain, vacation, whatever. So we need that tightened up. And all this is all added together. The new rules are cumbersome. They're really confusing for both us as elevators and farmers because now they got to remember, okay, is that grain in delayed price? And I have to do something, sign a paper or something within 30 days. Is it deferred? Is it, you know, which is it? You know, which set of rules are we playing the game under? Our desired outcome is just to have all the contracting fall under the same set of rules. We would prefer the verbal contracting in 57A because that's the most flexibility to our customers. I think that's really true to independent and free markets, because it's not forcing anybody into doing something at a time they don't want. And it eliminates duplication and trying to remember which rules we're at. So we would ask that, I'm going to say when you approve this today, or if, that also with that we get some clarification in writing from the PUC on which dates govern on these tickets, because there is confusion out there. And the other thing we would really press for is that subsection 10 be added or wording very similar, because we in no way want to leave you with the impression that we want to get rid of the requirement for signatures. That's not what we're after at all. It's not good business for any of us. But this seems to be the only avenue we've got to give the PUC enough time to work on this and come up with a legislative remedy so that all grain contracting is under the verbal rules, which I think, as you'll probably hear today from others, is really in the farmer's best interest. So that's what I've got. I guess I'll, any questions later or now, if as you so choose.
Yeah, I think we'll take questions later. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay.
Kathy, is there anybody else representing your association at this point? With that, then, we will go to staff, and then following staff, we'll open it up for any public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Melhoff from staff. If I could just kind of go through the procedural history of how we got here today. I promise not to take too much time, but looking back on Judge Portra's ruling, he based his opinion on 49-45-11, which is a requirement that a voluntary credit sale of grain must be in writing. And he combined that with Administrative Rule 2010-12-13, which subsection 9 requires that the contract be signed and dated by both the buyer and the seller. And he used the term that the court must construe the statutes together, so that those two statutes together required that the voluntary credit sale contract must be in writing and must be signed. And he also made the point that 49-45-11, along with the administrative rule, was more specific to voluntary credit sales, so that it would trump 57A-2-201. So he also made comments that when he looked at the transcript, that myself and Mr. Dom, who testified in the Martin Moss Dairy hearing, where I guess we more or less hung our hat on 57A-2-201. Both Mr. Dom and I testified in that hearing that there was no testimony on a voluntary credit sale during the bill hearings for House Bill 1167, where the revisions to 57A-2-201 were addressed. And from that, he concluded in his written opinion that the legislative intent was that it should not apply to VCS contracts because they weren't mentioned in any of the discussions before the legislative committees. But I would make the point that there was testimony about the importance of the farmer being able to do business from his combine and from his farm. And that was kind of, in my mind, what the crux of it was, more so than the fact that grain buyers need to have the ability to hedge their grain immediately because of the volatility in the markets. Certainly, representatives from the grain industry, that's what their major concern was that they be able to hedge their positions and not be exposed to the risk of a market that could go up significantly before the contracts are signed. So when the grain industry testified, that's what they directed their comments towards. But there was also testimony from the Farmers Union testified. Members of the committee also talked about the importance that farmers have the ability to do business from their farms and from their combines, and they don't lose the ability to bind those contracts so that they don't have to stop what they're doing and come to the grain elevator to sign those contracts in order to do business. And I think that was a very important component, and I guess I would argue that that was a big part of the legislative intent when the revisions to 57A-2-201 were passed by the legislature. Now going forward, the PUC has been granted the rulemaking authority, and we've also been granted the authority to waive rules if it's in the public's interest and if there would be no harm to producers as a result of the waiving of a rule. I think the proposal that the Grain and Feed Association is bringing forward today clearly meets those two objectives. Number one, I think by striking that small bit of language for the temporary basis that requires signing by the producer, brings the voluntary credit sale contracts, which is a contract for the sale of grain, more in line with the general contracts for forward contracting grain. And I think staff supports what they're trying to do. I think it's in the public interest. I think it's good for the grain industry, but more importantly, I think it's good for producers, because if they have to stop what they're doing to get in and sign their contracts, it interrupts their work during harvest time, which is when they're the busiest. And the flip side of that, if they don't make it in and get them signed, then they're subject to receiving a check when the 30 days runs out, which is required by State Statute 494510, requires that payment for grain be made on demand, and that even if no request for payment is made, that payment has to be made after 30 days, which is where we're at with why the PUC staff is requiring that those voluntary credit sales that are unsigned 30 days after the delivery are not paid. And I guess want to respond to Mr. Cope's comment about the inconsistent message. And I will agree, there is a lot of inconsistent messaging about that, because we're kind of we're in fast current on this, because there is no statute or rule which directs exactly where you go. I would state that a lot of the concerns about the average or the first or the last, a lot of those opinions are not coming from PUC warehouse inspectors or from myself. A lot of those are coming from federal inspectors who have different standards and grain elevators who are federal warehouses are talking to their federal inspectors, and then they're talking to us. So there is, and I know that I believe the USDA averages the loads. And I guess we're trying to somewhat conform to something. We're trying to find a way to make it work for the grain. I know that I've authorized some things that in the past we wouldn't have allowed, which, for example, one thing I've suggested they could do is get a contract signed up front without the bushels included on the contract, but just ensure that each scale ticket references that contract if that's where it's going at the end of the day, so that our inspectors can look at those loads and see where they're going and find a signed contract, even if the bushel amount isn't in there. Now, that's a little loose from what we've done in the past, but we were trying to find ways to make it work for the industry under the existing rules. And I think if we would approve the first part of their request, which is to strike the language from subsection 9 that requires the producer or the seller to sign and just require the buyer to sign, I think that would get us to a point where we could have a system where our inspectors would be able to hang our hat on that and say that we're complying with the law and we're complying with the spirit of Judge Portra's opinion based on the linkage of the administrative rule to the statute. And with that, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, we will go to public comment. I'm guessing we've got some members here in attendance today that might have a thought or two, and whoever wants to step forward first.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Brenda Foreman. I am Executive Director for South Dakota Association of Cooperatives. We are here today to support South Dakota Grain and Feed Association's request for a waiver of a portion of ARSD 2010-12-13, subsection 9, as well as a request to amend 2010-12-13 with a new section. Judge Portra's ruling, which led to this request, changes the way grain is bought and sold in South Dakota, and that's impacting both producers and the elevators that buy. Grain is typically developed at the convenience of the producers, and at times title passes to the seller, from the seller to the buyer. Price can be determined later. This is both used for the benefit of the buyer and the seller to manage the risk and to generate business both for the producers and for the businesses. Changes sought by South Dakota Grain and Feed will allow marketing options that are now used across the country and should not be eliminated from the options that South Dakota's producers and agribusinesses currently have. Ms. Zander and Mr. Cope have presented the key issues supporting this request, including the potential challenges of marketing, storing the grain, continued ability to purchase grain by the elevator, pricing dates, and storage liability. We would encourage the Commission to approve the proposed changes, allowing for the continued efforts and flexibilities that these options provide for both our producers and our grain elevators. Thank you.
Thank you. Others?
Commissioner, staff, my name is Mike Traxinger, and I'm the Legislative Director for the South Dakota Farmers Union. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. And on behalf of the South Dakota Farmers Union, we are here today to support the first provision of the request, which is the portion with regard to the waiver of the provision regarding the seller's signature. We do think it's extremely important to provide flexibility to producers on behalf of our 10,000 members across the state. The practice of making an oral agreement over the phone when it comes to grain marketing is a common practice. Excuse me. And this provision of a waiver would allow for the continued flexibility of this practice. We do think there is an opportunity to continue educating our producers about the rights that they have under contracts. This is, as Mr. Cope indicated, there's confusion over the types of contracts and the way in which they are often agreed to, and obviously DP means two different things. But aside from those, we think a temporary waiver, and I might suggest even including a sunset provision in the waiver to encourage the legislature to maybe act or for an administrative rule change specifically around this because of the fact that the law or the administrative rule would indicate otherwise, even though you may have the potential to grant a waiver. With regards to the second request for the amendment, I admit that I wasn't around with Farmers Union at the time that this was put into the statute of limitations. And as an attorney in the state of South Dakota as well, I think it's a little bit duplicative to add an entire section that is already stated in the statute of limitations as it be with regards to the judge's ruling. I also would suggest the commission just simply grant the waiver for the first provision at this point so that we can have an ongoing conversation about the what should be done with regards to educating producers around the ideas of these contracts and what there should be. From our perspective, it's about educating them on the protections and their rights. And we also are strongly supportive of keeping the signature in for the seller and the date. I think that those are specific provisions with regards to this agreement that have to be in place. And if I may, some of the issues with regards to the second provision that I would maybe just ask questions about when the commission is having discussions is specific to a time of writing and confirmation. I'm curious as to what type of writing and confirmation of a contract would there actually be if they're already sending out the contract as well. The other interesting piece, I think, to it, and this is already on the books, obviously under the statute of limitations, but 2 days, it was indicated earlier that farmers sometimes don't check their mail within 2 weeks, and you're giving them 2 days to either agree to a document or not. And I've looked up a similar provision in the state of Nebraska, and they actually have the same statute almost verbatim with 10 days as a provision. And I think that's something that I'm not saying should be agreed or disagreed with at this point in time, but I think it casts, I guess, a good question on what is the appropriate time frame around when to provide notification and give them an opportunity to either agree or disagree with what they're looking into as far as their contract agreement. So with that, South Dakota Farmers Union definitely supports the request for the waiver and looks forward to standing around for additional questions if there may be so.
Thank you. Others that would like to testify?
Oh, howdy. Ray Mark Moss, representing Mark Moss Dairy, Mark Moss Brothers, and the Mean Woman. A review of how we got here once again has to go back to Anderson and the whole problem there. And we can go back to the judge's ruling and that, and, there's a lot of numbers here. I don't understand them. I'm not an attorney. But basically, the judge made a ruling, and now we're here to try and circumvent his ruling. We have the letter here. I have a copy of the letter dated April 26th, and that, which apparently the Grain Association or members sent to the judge asking him to reconsider his decision. And his reply on April 29th, I am receipt of your letter dated April 26th from 3 grain buyers asking me to reconsider my decision in this matter. I am mindfully affected that my decision may have on the grain buying industry. But I cannot change my decision because of that fact. My job is to interpret and apply the law the best that I am able, which is what I have done in this case. If a party believes my decision is in error, the appropriate procedure is to apply my decision or to appeal my decision to the South Dakota Supreme Court. Of course, the other remedy is to encourage the legislature to amend the law so that it will say what those in the industry think it should say. Why are we here today? I guess we're here to try and go around the judge's decision. Hopefully we won't have to go back to court. The Grain Elevator Association keeps talking about how they're going to help us farmers. Well, they were a big help when I lost $47,000 to Anderson. I never heard a peep out of them. They want to control my grain without giving me due notice of my rights, which I'm against. The South Dakota Farmers Union is here and supporting them. I'm a member. Well, I don't agree with South Dakota Farmers Union. And the few members I talked to weren't polled by the South Dakota Farmers Union. So I'm not sure which members they're representing. Okay? Everybody talks about the 30-day limit. 30 days, long time. We all got computers. We all got internet. We all got faxes. We got cell phones. You know, I got people calling me all the time. They can find me no matter where I'm at and ask me questions or tell me what I'm doing wrong. So it's pretty easy to get a hold of a farmer. I don't understand the whole little laws that and numbers of laws and everything else. I would think it'd be pretty simple. A farmer hauls his grain to the elevator, sells it, and gets paid. You know. If he wants to do something else, that's his business. But at least he should know his rights. If the elevators are so concerned about farmers, then why don't they support farmers being the first secured creditor at those elevators rather than the last unsecured creditor? I don't hear them talking about that. All I hear them talking about is getting control of my grain. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. You know how I feel about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray. Anybody else like to testify in the audience? Lisa, I know you're on the line. Did you wish to testify?
Finally, very short. The South Dakota corn growers do support a waiver. First portion of the waiver requests their normal business practice and continue until we can come forward with a legislative fix next year.
Thank you. Again, anybody else in the audience wish to testify? If not, we will go to questions from commissioners. Commissioner Fegan.
I do have a question of Kristen, because I'm assuming that you worked with staff as the attorney. The request for a waiver in 2010-12-17, it says a licensed grain buyer. And they're the ones that can request a waiver. So can you help me understand? Because I know in telecom we can do it with the association because we've given them that authority to do that. Have we given an association the authority? And I haven't seen it. So if we have, I haven't seen it. The authority to represent a licensed grain buyer? Or do all the grain buyers need to come in here separately to ask for a waiver? Or how can we do a blanket waiver?
Thank you, Commissioner. As far as I know, there hasn't been a blanket authority given to the South Dakota Grain and Feed. However, we felt because this was addressing industry practice, not any particular buyer or seller, that it would be appropriate in this case to let the industry leaders speak for the grain buyers. Unless Jim has a different
Commissioner Feagin, could I follow up on that question? I was going to ask the same question, but I was going to ask it of the moving party, of Ms. Zander. The rule is pretty specific in that the right to request a waiver is given to a licensed grain buyer. And the association itself obviously is not, but is made up of. Can you explain to us why you think you have a legal right to request, as an association, the waiver?
If I may, Commissioner, we are advised by our attorney that we could do it. Again, as we, the first letter or first paragraph of the letter is, we, the undersigned, all licensed grain buyers in the state of South Dakota. Again, I think it was a industry practice, and we assumed that we could ask for the waiver. Thank you.
Commissioner Feagin, other questions?
I'm going to wait till other commissioners have questions, and I'll come in at the end.
Commissioner Hansen, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Commissioner Feagin's question, because I think everyone's wondering that question, whether or not we can provide a blanket waiver for all grain buyers. Personally, I believe that. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'm getting a feedback along with everything else. I think, from my perspective at least, if we are going to have a waiver, it should be for everyone. I would be uncomfortable just providing it to one or two buyers. I think it needs to be for everyone. So I appreciate the fact that that was the application. The question that I would have at this time is a little bit of a clarification on the testimony that was given pertaining to the statement being made that every ticket stands on its own or the other options that are available, and asking for a clarification on the date. I'd like a little more information on that.
Would you like Mr. Cope to take that or Mr. Melhoff?
Either can clarify it for me, I'm sure.
Okay. Mr. Cope is, for the record, Mr. Cope is pointing at Mr. Melhoff. Go ahead, John.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Cope. Mr. Chairman, clarification on the every ticket stands on their own. There's some industry practices. We have it in our own statutes with regard to payment. We use the term all payments must be made within 30 days of final delivery. Now, to me, that implies that if there is a contract for delivery for 20,000 bushels of grain, that the clock does not start ticking on that contract until the contract is full, and there might be a 10 or 20 day delivery period, but we don't feel that it's in anybody's best interest to require the grain buyer to pay for each load separately when the grain is being applied to a contract. Now, I know the USDA looks at grain in different ways. I mean, some look at it as if you take delivery over a 20-day period, they average the dates to determine when the clock should start ticking with regard to payment under those circumstances. With regard to the PUC, as I said, we are kind of in a little bit of fast current here, because there really isn't a specific statute that requires each load to stand on its own, or, you know, there is the statement and statute about final delivery. So when you're talking about random loads, you could easily make the argument that, yes, each scale ticket should stand on its own.
Yeah, that's a confusing challenge there. Thank you. Could you also elaborate a little bit, Mr. Melhoff? I'm curious, do you believe that a waiver would in any way be detrimental to grain sellers?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe that the waiver would be detrimental to grain sellers at all. I think the current state of uncertainty that we're in now, I think, is detrimental to producers and therefore is detrimental to grain buyers, because it puts the grain buyer in the position of having to price grain at a time that might not be advantageous to the producer. And when that happens, somebody's going to bear the ire of the producer who's had his grain priced at a time that's unfavorable to him, or has received payment at a time that does not work into his financial planning and his tax planning. So it, with respect to that, I think the waiver would allow the grain warehouse staff something to hang our hat on, to be in compliance with the judge's ruling, our opinion, that the two, the statute and the administrative rule, have to work in harmony. So if the signing requirement for the producer is removed, if the grain buyer signs it, it meets the standard of voluntary credit sale, and it meets the standards of the statute of frauds. And I think approving the waiver with respect to the elimination of the language in subsection 9 would be to the benefit of producers and to the industry, and frankly to the grain warehouse staff, because it would put us back on a solid footing as to what we can expect and what we can enforce as we're doing our inspections.
Thank you, Mr. Milhoff. Mr. Chair, I'd have one last question, if I may.
Certainly.
And this would be of PUC counsel. Is Mr. Smith there?
He is.
And John, could you tell us, please, regardless of what action we might take here, could a court still, even though there was a waiver in place, could a court disregard that? And is this a cure-all for to have a waiver? Could we run into the same situation?
Unfortunately, I guess I have to say I think so. I don't think it's a cure-all. The judge pointed out in his denial of the reconsideration that the real fix here is a legislative fix. What the judge really looked at was, he put some weight on the existence of this particular rule of Subdivision 9. He did. But that wasn't all he looked at. He looked at the legislative testimony that occurred, and mainly what he looked at is what he perceived to be a conflict between our Section 11, which says that a contract must be, quote, in writing, which, in a way the statute of frauds does require. It requires a writing. It just doesn't require that it be signed. But there is a common understanding out there that a term, a contract in writing, means a contract executed by two parties. And plus, the existence of our rule to him bolstered the fact that we construed it that way. So could the waiver make some difference if another case went to the court in the near term? It might. But I certainly can't give any assurance to the commission or grain buyers or the public that that will happen. He basically ruled that the statute of frauds does not apply to voluntary credit sales because of that conflict, which was not addressed. And so basically what the waiver would really do for us is maybe provide a little clarification as to what Section 11 does in terms of a strong implication that these types of contracts aren't to be covered by the statute of frauds provisions, because there's a particular provision that seems to say the opposite.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I don't believe I've got any questions. Any further questions, Commissioner Feagin?
I have a question of counsel also.
Sure, Commissioner Feagin.
So your belief is that the waiver gives really no guarantee to the industry that this will really help them in any type of court case?
Well, I don't say it couldn't do anything. I'm saying...
And I said guarantee.
No, I do not think it provides... I put it this way. I don't think it provides the level of certainty I'd want to see out there. If I'm a grain buyer, I'm going to do everything in my power to get those contracts signed, if that's the route I want to go down. And if I'm not going to get them signed, if people don't want to sign them. And again, today, I mean, there's a lot of options I think the industry could look at that are a little different than... we operate on a totally electronic system here. Every single document before the PUC is handled electronically. We're in the days of PDFs, which can be transmitted by... My brother died here 3 months ago, and I just signed the transfer documents to transfer his bank accounts over to an estate bank account, and that was all done by PDF. So there, I think there's an awful lot of things that can be done, but I do not think we can count on a waiver here with certainty that it will lead to a different result before a court of law in the state.
So if we open up or ask staff to open up a docket to look at administrative rules and maybe amend them, would that be a safer approach and give more certainty to our producers and our sellers and buyers?
Well, I think it could give more certainty. Again, I really believe, I agree with Judge Portra, that the long-term, the real solution here is to get in front of the legislature, make the necessary legislative changes to make it clear. And that means getting rid of the conflict between our Section 11 of the Grain Buyer Law and the statute of frauds. And I think the one difference that would make maybe with a rulemaking is then we would be providing an affirmative interpretation, if you want to call it that. I don't think we can make the statute of frauds apply now to contracts because the judge has ruled that it doesn't, at least without going into a further level of court proceedings. But what it would do is it would serve as a detailed and more affirmative statement by the commission of what it deems the words in writing to mean, insofar as you can do that via rule. And I think you have some ability to do that. I don't think you can make this subject to 57A2-201, given the court decision.
So Senator Valley in the room could call a special session and just make it happen for us.
I'm sure he wants to.
Further questions? Seeing none, are there any motions in this regard? I will move in Grain Warehouse 13-002 that the commission deny the request for a waiver of ARSD 20:10:12:13 sub 9. And allow me to explain why and where I really think we need to go with this. First of all, I am a little bit concerned about the requirement that it be requested by a licensed grain buyer, but that's not the real substantive reason that I am moving to deny this. It comes a lot more down to making sure that farmers have protections in this area as we go forward. Understand that Judge Portra's ruling said that 57A-2-201 does not apply to these kinds of contracts, and realize that that statute has some farmer protections in it. It says that you've got to send the contract to the farmer. It says the farmer can object to that in a certain amount of time. There are farmer protections in that. But at this point, the judge said that doesn't apply. And if we were to grant this waiver, not only is there not that farmer protection, but we were also now saying, farmer, you don't even need to sign the contract. And that really concerns me to further move down a path away from the protection for the farmers. Now, having said that, I certainly understand the situation that we are in, and I appreciate Grain and Feed bringing this issue. It needs to be resolved. Mr. Martinmuth said that he saw us here attempting to circumvent what the judge said, and the judge said the legislature needs to fix this. Don't disagree with that. But the legislature has also created a body of law called the Administrative Procedures Act that delegates certain legislative authority to state agencies through the rulemaking process. And I believe that the PUC should, at this time, as quickly as possible, avail ourselves of that delegation of authority and move quickly into the rulemaking process. The language of a proposed rule that's been submitted by Grain and Feed may or may not be perfect, but it's where I would like to start. And Mr. Traxinger has already raised some questions about that. Those are good questions that I think need to be wrestled with. Assuming my motion, I shouldn't assume, but if my motion to deny the waiver passes, I will follow it up with a motion to begin a rulemaking process immediately to deal with the substance of what Grain and Feed has proposed. And I would also move forward with a rulemaking dealing with Mr. Cope's question of defining how do we deal with these multiple deliveries on a contract, because that does need to be defined so that everybody's on the same playing field. Now, everybody's out there saying, well, what kind of time frame are we looking at? And I've worked through that. Without going the emergency rules route, but going the regular rules route, and there are time frames laid out in statute, essentially we would hold a hearing on these proposed rules at one of our meetings in July, and it could be at any of the three meetings we've got scheduled in July. The rules would go before the Legislative Rules Review Committee on August 19th and could be effective by September 8th. And I do fully understand we've missed one particular harvest period with that. But let me make one final comment. Understand, and I think everybody in this room understands this, but just so that anybody listening, the only area we have a problem is when the farmer chooses not to sign the contract. Okay? And so, assuming we move down this path that I've just laid out, between now and September 8th, is there a much heightened urgency for Mr. Cope and his fellow managers to make sure he's getting signatures and for farmers to make sure they're signing the contracts? The answer is yes. Much heightened. But I believe that by September 8th, we can have resolved most, if not all, of this particular issue and maintain the protections that I think the farmers need so that farmers are, in fact, sent a contract, have an opportunity to object to it, and still are required to sign it. Further discussion on the motion to deny the waiver. Commissioner Feagin.
I certainly appreciate the motion. The last thing I want to do is mislead producers today on that they're protected, and so we're going to go the route that we think is the safest and the cleanest and actually protects producers. So thank you.
Additional comments? Seeing none. Yes, Commissioner Hansen.
Forgive me, I had you on mute. I appreciate your comments. I think they're very well thought out. And I only have a question on the optimism of the speed at which we could accomplish the rulemaking. I'd like to have a thought from perhaps Ms. Wiest, if she is there. She is usually the one who's on the top of the rulemaking process. If not, Mr. Smith?
No, absolutely. Rolaine can visit about that, and I can assure you she and I have talked this through before I laid out the timeline. But, Rolaine, go ahead.
Yes, and I think that timeline is possible. And I believe the rules hearing is the 20th.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Other comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion to deny the waiver will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Are there further motions? At this point, in this particular docket, Grain Warehouse 13-002, I would move to direct staff to open a rulemaking docket to involve, at a minimum, the suggested language from South Dakota Grain and Feed Association, and also the issue that Mr. Cope raised today with the contract and delivery dating, and any other grain warehouse issues that might need to be resolved.
Just one question that actually Ms. Wiester sort of raised is that particular subdivision of subdivision D of the statute of frauds the only one of those subdivisions you think we ought to consider? There's several of them. There's three of them in there, I think.
Did you want me to answer that? Kathy Zander. I guess I would rather consult our attorney and get back to you if we could.
Yeah, and fortunately we've got time because, as I've indicated, there'll be a public notice issued sometime in the next couple of weeks indicating when our public hearing will be. It will be sometime mid to later July, and at that point all parties will have an opportunity to present their testimony on what the final rule should in fact look like, and we will take that at that time. Additional discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of opening a rulemaking on this particular docket will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. I believe that is the last item of business on our agenda. A couple of announcements. Some of the commissioners will be attending Sioux Valley Energy's annual meeting in Hartford tonight. Some commissioners will be attending the Mid-America Regulatory Conference in Little Rock, Arkansas next week. And the next scheduled commission meeting is going to be June 18th. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Move to adjourn. All those in favor will vote aye. Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Nelson.